to the directions of the minister. Others will be considered in private session or non-public session, and the determinations will be made during this afternoon and will appear on the website of the council as soon as practicable. I'll first of all ask the members of the panel to introduce themselves so that you understand just exactly who they are. First of all, I go by the name of Angus Talbot. I'm formerly a solicitor, I'm formerly a barrister. I was a judge on the Land and Environment Court for 15 years, and I am a member of a number of panels similar to the one that I'm sitting on today. I'll ask the next panel member who I see on the list, Annalise Tuer, if you would please introduce yourself, Ms. Tuer.
My name's Annalise Tuer. I have qualifications in architecture and planning, and I was previously a commissioner of the Land and Environment Court, and I currently sit on a number of these panels. And also, for the record, I have no conflict of interest in any of the matters coming to the panel today.
Thank you for reminding me. I have no interest to declare. Lindsay Day, Ms. Day, are you in a position to describe your qualifications? Thank you.
Yep, certainly. I am a consultant town planner. I have qualifications in geography, natural resource management, and town and country planning. I have a variety of public and private clients. I'm on two other panels in addition to the Inner West. They are Lane Cove and Bayside, and I'm a member of the Planning Institute of Australia, and I have no declaration of conflict of interest in any matter being raised today.
Thank you. Kath Roach, Ms. Roach, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Firstly, I have no conflict of interest in any matter before the panel today. My background in relation to this panel, I was the Internal Ombudsman at Sutherland Shire Council for 5 years. I've worked with the Department of Housing for a number of years as the Executive Director looking after the governance and regulation area. And I've run my own consulting business for about 13, 14 years now, most of which consults into local government and does a number of administrative reviews, including reviews and application processes. On this particular panel, I am here as the community representative. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. As I said, there are two matters to go to the public meeting. And what will happen there is that each of the people who are registered to speak in respect of those two matters will be asked to do so. It may be that the panel may have questions for any individual speaker, not necessarily so, but they may. And at the conclusion of those discussions, the panel will reserve its decision. The first matter, I should mention too, that you have a strict limit of 3 minutes for each speaker. And that's enforced, and there will be an indication when the 3 minutes are up. So moving first of all to the item which is number three on the agenda, but the first matter in the public meeting relates to the proposed development at 29 Tupper Street, Enmore. And the first speaker listed is Christopher Fleming. Are you there, Mr. Fleming?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Thank you. Your 3 minutes starts now.
I'm speaking regarding the spacing of buildings across the three properties, which I list in order north to south. The uphill property at number 21, the development application property at number 29, and the downhill property, which is our property at 33 to 37 Tupper Street. The proposed buildings of the DA are aligned close to the property line adjacent to our downhill property, which maximises the space and sunlight for the DA property as it allows the greatest gap and therefore maximum sunlight possible between the DA property and the uphill property of 21. It is on that uphill side of the property that the balconies and driveway of the DA are placed. While this is great for attracting buyers to the DA property, it robs most of the sunlight from our downhill property. the nearest part of the DA property building is only 5.2 metres from our unit balcony. In our unit, we will get no sunlight in winter or in summer. Absence of sunlight will result in dampness and mould, which has been shown to be detrimental to health. I have checked our area to see what spacing exists between unit buildings of similar height, and in all instances have found there is at least double the spacing, and in most cases more, than that which is provided for between the DA property and our property at 33 to 37. This sets a new and unhealthy precedent in this area. I would suggest that the buildings in the DA property be situated evenly between the uphill property at number 21 and our property at 33 to 37, so as to share the sunlight evenly between the three properties. This would also mean that the driveway in the DA property may need to be moved from the uphill side of the DA property to the street end of the property and angled down to provide entry to the underground car park. This is how underground car park driveways are situated in many modern unit buildings. There should be no excuse for hogging most available sunlight to the benefit of the DA property at the detriment of current properties. End of. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fleming. I'm sure the panel appreciates what you're saying. I'll just ask if any panel member has questions for you. Ms. Roach?
Mr. Chair.
Stuart?
No questions.
And Ms. Day?
No questions, thank you.
All right, Mr. Fleming, you're unencumbered by questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next person who is listed to speak is, and I apologise if I get this wrong, Ua Wetzlich. Are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, Eva. Eva.
Yes, Eva.
Oh, yes. I've got a W in mind.
I know. I just prefer the Eva.
Aha. Uh-huh. All right. Thank you. You ready to speak? Your 3 minutes will start now.
Okay. Firstly, I would like to say that I'm really disappointed with the council's assessment of the impact of the new development on the residents of our buildings. The biggest issue for us is the non-compliance with the side boundary setbacks. They are 2.5 meters as opposed to required 4.5 meters. They are variously described as minor or numerical variations, but with building as tall as 14 meters, it would rob the lower levels of our building of light. The overshadowing diagrams show that all the living rooms on the northern side of our building will be deprived of hours and hours of direct sun. That affects 12 families. Third of them will be living in perpetual shadow for most of the year. Next issue concerns our trees. 5 of our trees are located less than a meter from the boundary. The root system will be cut to allow for the basement parking planned right on the boundary. The documentation doesn't have tree protection zone calculations or diagrams for them. In our submission, we pointed out that the developer's arborist made incorrect assumptions in his report, but the issue was ignored. The assessment report states that the proposal is unlikely to harm our trees. There is no justification for this statement. There is also no plan for protecting the branches overhanging the boundary during the building works. We nurtured these trees for over decades, and we need more guarantee than just vague statements like that. Third issue is about the trees to be removed. Removal of the mature trees without replacing them contravenes Inner West Council's own tree canopy policy. 7 trees will be removed. Only 2 will be replaced, both of them on public land. Are the trees on private land less important? The ones to be removed on the boundary with 33 Tupper Street are between 10 and 25 meters in height. They have canopies, they provide shade. In the landscaping for the new building, they are only shrubs, less than 2 meters tall.
Sorry, Chair, that was 3 minutes.
Finish up now, please. Miss Wellish, bring your summary together.
Well, I think that all of this could be mitigated if instead of squeezing a 4-story building on 16 meters frontage, the development would consist, say, of several 2-story townhouses. What prevails here is that the profit margin of the developer is more important than the trees and well-being of the community.
All right, thank you. I'll see if any member of the panel wishes to address a question to you. Any panel member wish to ask any questions of Eva?
No, from me, thank you.
Just one question from me, Annalise Tor. Just in relation to the trees that you mentioned on your property, I'm just looking at the ground floor plan, and can you just tell me which ones they are?
They would be trees number from 15 to 20 in the arborist report.
Okay, thank you.
No questions from me, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, Ms. Wetzlich. Now, the general rule is that there only be 3 speakers for each side of the argument. I notice that there are 2 persons describing themselves as the applicant, as together with 2 architects on behalf of the applicant. I would prefer, without some argument to the contrary, that one or other of the people representing the applicant be the only person to speak in that regard. So that would be Mr. Cady or Mr. Wang. Are you prepared to make that choice?
Yes, certainly. And as we put in with our submission, we are happy with the officer's assessment and are merely making ourselves available for any questions.
I see. All right. Thank you. That takes me to David Randerson. Do you have anything to say, Mr. Randerson? Is Mr. Randerson here?
Mr. David Randerson is not here. My name is Ian Lim. I'm the design architect for the project. Mr. Chair?
Yes. Could I have that name again, please?
Ian Lim, L-I-M.
Thank you.
I'll be speaking on behalf of DKO. Are there any questions that arise?
And what about Josie Chong? Does that include Josie Chong as well, does it?
Yes, Josie Chong is right next to me.
Right, okay. Yes, there will be some questions from the panel. Annalise, Tour, you've got your audio, your video on, Ms. Tour?
Yeah, it's just I've got a bit bad reception, so I'm turning it off except when I'm speaking. I suppose just addressing the issues that have been raised by the objectors, particularly the point about the non-compliant side setback and the setback of your proposal, particularly that 2-bedroom unit fronts the courtyard between the buildings. I mean, that setback from the gap in the buildings to the north, presumably to maximise solar access to those units. But in doing so, it's shifting it closer to the units block at 33 to 37. So Can you just explain the logic behind that and what would have been the result if that part of the building were moved closer to the northern boundary?
And placed in the centre?
Yeah.
I think it had to do with the appearance of the units, basically from the street.
This is Mr. Lim, is it?
Yes, that's right. We wanted the appearance of the terraces to be similar to the other developments on the street. So we did go through an extensive PDA with council. We had discussed that having a lower story appearance in the street allowed us for a lesser setback. Again, reducing the bulk to the front with those two and a half story terraces allows for maximum solar to the building to the rear of us.
Yeah, I'm talking about the actual building on the
eastern
side of the courtyard, not the terraces. The
terraces are 3 meters setback from the boundary, not two and a half.
Okay, we're not talking about the terrace. We're talking about the rear.
The apartment building. Sorry, Mr.
Yeah. The rear block.
The apartment building is 3 meters setback from the rear, not two and a half, which is compliant with the DCP of the ADG setback to blank.
Solid boundary with 33 you need to address.
Yeah.
I suppose specifically my question is, if that part of the building was moved closer to the northern boundary, what impact would that have on the amenity of your proposed units? And conversely, what impact or reduction in impact would it have on the building to the south?
It'll have a lesser impact, but very minorly. We are already at 3 meters to the north of us. So we are basically on borderline compliance or compliant, minimum compliant with the site setbacks already.
Okay, I'm just looking at, again, DA201, and it's got a blue dotted line that says 2.5 meter DCP low density setback.
Yep.
And then your building is set back probably about, I don't know, 200 millimeters, more than that. So why are you saying it's 3 meters? Where do I see the dimension of 3 meters?
If you look to the right of that,
yeah,
the 3 meter ADG setback to the apartment building, only yeah. The terraces to the front have a 2.5 meter setback, which is compliant with the low density code. So 3 meters is the minimum for a blank wall situation to the side boundary.
Mm-hmm. All right, but regardless of that compliance issue, obviously we have to look at the impact. So you're saying there would be a minor increase in impact?
Yes, that's right.
Minor reduction. So that's in terms of solar access?
That's right.
And what units would that be to? Can you explain how it works in terms of where it would improve and where it would not improve?
That would be to... This is the easternmost unit, the two easternmost units on the ground floor.
Uh-huh. And that's if it was moved back, what, a meter or...
Yeah, so it moves forward. It have little impact, really, still.
And what reduction in amenity would it result in for your apartment?
Rubbish. Just give me a second. I'll pull up the... So if I refer to DA... 422 and EA 421. Pushing down a meter, we'll probably get a little bit below where the window is now because of the sun being low at the time.
So sorry, can you repeat that? I just didn't.
Refer to DA 421.
Yeah.
So this is peak winter, and this is probably the worst case scenario throughout the year. I would say that you probably get back about 300 mils more of soil by pushing in the mid, by pushing in a meter forward. But as you can see, is this the nature of the site as well, where the buildings are very, very close together and coupled together. But it would mean very little to move it forward. And that also causing a non-compliance with the northern.
But you're saying you'd get 300 millimeters extra solar access to 33 to 36.
We'll have to do that study, but my guess would be yes.
Okay, but what impact would it have on you, the amenity of the unit that would be moved forward?
That would mean that our building was closer to the building to the north.
Could it still comply? Would it not?
It would not comply with the sub 65 setbacks, Mr. Chair. And it also reduced the amenity to the apartments, to new apartments that we're building.
So sorry, it wouldn't comply with the ADG setback because it's habitable rooms, is it?
Less than 3 meters.
What if the choice is to move it or?
No, the bit I'm talking about is the bit that's set back considerably more than 3 meters. The bit you've got to the easternmost part of the site, you've got a 3-bedroom unit that's set back 3 meters. The next unit along is a 2-bedroom unit and it's set back visually about 6 meters. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So if you moved that, say, 1 meter, you'd get rid of your balcony without even changing the floor plan. You'd get rid of part of your terrace to the east, your terrace to the
north.
Well, I'm just saying, shifting that bit forward, what are the implications to your unit?
So we're basically talking about the middle 2-bedroom unit. Is that right?
Yeah. The middle 2-bedroom unit.
Okay, sorry, that makes more sense.
The one that's set back quite a long way from the northern boundary.
Yes, that's right.
Opposite the sort of gap between the two buildings, which is presumably done to maximize outlook and solar access to that unit. What I want to find out is, what impact would it have on the amenity of that unit if it was shifted further away from the building to the south?
We pushed it forward a meter to a line of the balcony.
Yeah, roughly.
We have minor improvements to units 203. And even then, I would think it would be about 300 mils or 200 mils of extra solar to the window.
All right, but it wouldn't necessarily, you could do it without having drastic impact on the amenity of that unit.
Yes.
All right, thank you. Oh, and just one other question. Also, if that unit, if the bedroom were taken off and you got a greater separation between the two buildings, the terraces and the building to the back, what reduction in impact does that have?
So, could you repeat that again?
The bedroom, the second bedroom, the bedroom that's closest to the terraces, so that fronts onto the courtyard, if that were removed and the separation distance between the two buildings made compliant, what improvement in amenity would that have to the building to the south? Does it cause trigger solar access?
It would some, yes. But again, it's...
You'd need to look at it.
We need to look at it, yes.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Day?
I'm wondering the logic. I understand that there have been a number of iterations of the plan and a pre-DA, et cetera, for the application. And earlier iterations had more of a conventional style building, residential flat building at the front. Why the change to having more of a townhouse appearance? I think you mentioned that the street was to better reflect the existing development on the street. But on the eastern side of Tupper Street, it's all much of it is three-storey residential flat buildings. So I'm wondering if there's any possibility of changing the configuration of the front building to perhaps lessen the impact at the rear and whether not only in relation to overshadowing of the building to the south of the site, but some tree retention could also be, you know, of benefit to neighbours as well.
There is no tree retention really to the front of the...
I'm saying that if you perhaps change the building form at the front or the street side end of the site, you could have a lesser impact to the eastern rear part of the site. And the logic of suddenly creating a townhouse appearance at the street, you know, why did that occur? And are there options that could perhaps lessen the impact at the lower or the rear end of the site, particularly for the neighbours to the south?
So a bit of history to this project.
Thank you.
We did go through a pre-DA process for this, and originally we looked at many options, having the residential flat building run straight along with a gap at maximum height. We found this lowering the height of having a smaller building, greater solar access to the rear of this. Having that smaller footprint also allowed better solar access to the rear of this as well. And on the point of the terraces having a residential flat building look, I think we were quite sympathetic with the surrounding buildings and terraces, and council at that time was very supportive of the fact that we did something different. They kind of brought the scale down from an R1 zone, which was kind of introduced quite abruptly, really, in a really quite domestic scale of the street.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Roach, have you got any questions following those other points that have been raised?
No, I think they've been addressed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Well, the panel will give some consideration to what has been put to it. I'll just give you the opportunity, Mr. Lim, to reflect on the prospect of moving the rear section in a northerly direction. Does the applicant raise any inherent objection to such a course?
We're trying to reduce the impact.
So Mr. Chair, I think that in doing this design, there's a lot of consideration given to the existing trees and the nature of the site and the buildings around us. We've tried every avenue in this aspect to design something that's really sensitive to this area.
I see. So you don't want to answer my question as to whether...
Could you repeat that again?
The question was whether during the discussion it was suggested that the rear building be moved northerly in order to try and improve the amenity of the lower units in number 33. And there was a discussion about the impacts on your project and on that property, albeit marginal. Is there any objection that you would raise that would make such a suggestion untenable?
I would say the only... Ian, do you want to go?
Mr. Chair, the only issue that arises to me is the potential intrusion into the canopy zone of tree number 4.
Yes.
But otherwise, in architectural terms, it would seem possible, but it would impinge on that further into that tree canopy.
Well, the building doesn't actually... It's not in line with any building, is it? It's in line with the gap.
Yes, that's right.
There is a red dotted line that indicates the canopy.
Oh, yes, I see. Yes. So it would intrude into that further.
Yes.
Thank you. All right, the panel will take into account what's transpired, and we'll confer this afternoon, and the determination will be made and published on the website. Thank you for your assistance.
Thank you, sir.
Moving on now to item number 4, which relates to the proposed development of number 95 Grove Street, Birch Grove. And the first person who's listed to speak is Gerard Palmer. Are you there, Mr. Palmer?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. Your 3 minutes now commences.
Okay. The DA that's currently approved and this latest DA are not based on the facts on the ground. Our property lies, there are unique features about our property. It lies at an angle to the boundary.
Just let me clarify here. Your property is the property round the corner in Wharf Street, a rather majestic three-storey place sitting on top of the same rock outcrop looking towards the water. Is that right?
Correct.
Thank you.
We sit below the bottom of the rock outcrop. So our property is actually 2 metres below the current level of the ground floor of the new extension. We also lie within 5 metres, 2.9 metres of the boundary. We don't believe that the approved DA has taken account of those facts. As a result...
Do you understand, Mr. Palmer? I don't want to get you upset by my interruption, but I just want to make sure that you don't end up addressing what has already been approved, because that is not up for discussion today. The only thing that's up for discussion is the modification application.
Agreed.
We can't deal with the other.
The extra...
We might like to, but we can't.
Yes. Okay.
The extra... As long as you understand that, go ahead.
The extra extension will make what we consider an awful situation much worse, because it will impinge even further on our privacy and light access. And that was the points that I tried to make, we made, myself and my wife, in our submission. It all goes back to the fact that nobody has checked on the ground to see the situation at first hand. And the drawings, we believe, are inaccurate and misleading and continue to be misleading in this latest application. I want to leave you with a final point. The picture behind me shows the view from our window, from our kitchen, of the current situation. And you'll see what it is like when this latest extension would be added.
Yes, you've sent us a copy of that picture, I think.
Yeah. So the white line marks where the new extension would be. As you can see, we've already lost quite a bit of light with the existing approved extension. Now we'll really be left with very little light. And this is on our first floor. I'm not even showing you the ground floor impact. So I want to leave that with you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Palmer. And we do also have the benefit of that on paper. So we understand what it is. I'll see if there's any member of the panel who wishes to address any questions to you, Mr. Palmer. Ms. Tua? Ms. Day?
Yes, sorry, I was trying to...
Oh, yes, you are there. Sorry, yes.
Yeah. So specifically, so I understand what you're saying, Mr. Palmer, you're saying that your property is below the level of what's proposed.
Yes.
And that a further extension of what's proposed will further exacerbate the impact that you perceive it's already having, because you've got to measure the bulk, not just from ground level, but you've got to add essentially a 2 metres onto it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
No questions for me. Thank you.
Roach?
No, thank you, Mr. Palmer. And we've got those pictures from your submission the other day, so thank you for that. They were good.
Thank you, Mr. Palmer. The next person I call is Brett Jansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're the neighbour in Grove Street.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
93. Thank you, Mr. Jansen.
Mr. Chair, we are cognizant that the panel is only considering the modification to the ground floor addition that seeks to increase its footprint by moving it 1.5 metres rearward and 1.3 metres closer to our boundary. There is only one matter on which I would like to add some detail to that which is in our submissions, and another two critical matters that are also mentioned that I would like, with the panel's permission, to highlight. Firstly, we're asking that the modification be refused because it will cause more overshadowing to our backyard than that which has already been approved by council under the approved DA, because it will be higher than the proposed timber fence. May I hold up the drawing by the applicant's architects, DKO?
Thank you. Up, higher, and no, too high, just a little bit, that's it.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
On there, hopefully you can see the blue rectangle.
Yes.
Modification.
Yes.
The orange is the DA approved. And the green is the timber fence, the proposed timber fence.
Right.
I have the reference for the panel if required, but I'll move on unless it is. Although the drawing is the existing house, it also clearly shows the levels applicable to the modification and accurately the proposed timber fence on the boundary. It irrefutably demonstrates that the modification will be higher than the fence and thus causing more overshadowing to our backyard than is already allowed by the approved development, despite council's opining that it will not. The council failed to consider and apply the definition of fence in the Dividing Fences Act 1991, which states that a fence does not include a retaining wall, and considered that it is permissible for the proposed fence to be erected at a higher level on our property and attached to our planter boxes, which are wholly within our property. On the issue of the modifications overshadowing our property, I rely on the applicant's architect's DKO's drawings that will reveal certain levels. I can read them out if that would be of assistance to the council, to the panel, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Would you like me to read them?
Panel members would like to see that, hear that.
According to DKO's drawings, the roof height of the modification on the southern side near our boundary is at 17,921. On the boundary, the land rises from 15,68 at the western end to 16,55 at the eastern. The height of the proposed 1800 mil fence on the boundary increases from 17,480 at the western end to 17,800 at the eastern end.
Excuse me, Chair, that's 3 minutes.
Yes, can you bring it all together, please, Mr. Jansen?
Certainly. There is now complete overshadowing that has been approved by the DA in our living room and adjacent living space. Consequently, our sunlight to those areas cannot be further reduced by the modification. In our submission, the panel should consider the cumulative effect of the overshadowing and not merely the increase caused by the modification in isolation. In any event, there will be significant, as a percentage, overshadowing of the little solar access that remains. Secondly, our objection to the council's reclassification of our TV and lounge room as our living room is addressed in our submissions.
Yes, well, I've read that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In passing, I note that the council refers to the room in the applicant's plans, in which there is also a kitchen and dining room that is located in the same position as ours, as the living room. The third and our final objection, which relates to the overshadowing impact of the 6 metre replacement tree, which is a condition of the approved DA, which has also been addressed in our submission, Mr. Chair.
I thought you could.
I'm sorry?
Sorry, I thought you'd finished.
I've got a paragraph to go, if I may.
Oh, right, one paragraph allowed.
Thank you very much. I'm indebted. The essence of our submission is that the Council failed to mention the overshadowing impact of the future 6-metre tree in its report of its considerations in the approval process of the modification. For transparency, at least, the Council should, if in fact it did, have mentioned whether or not it considered the impact of the tree reducing our sunlight before recommending the approval of the modification. We vehemently disagree with the Council's conclusion that the non-compliances are acceptable. They are not acceptable to my wife and me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Jansen. Don't go away just yet. Ms. Day, do you have any questions?
No questions from me, thank you.
Ms. Roach?
No, thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Jansen.
And Ms. Tua?
No questions, thank you.
There you are, Mr. Jansen. Thank you very much for your assistance, and all of your observations will be taken into account, I assure you. The panel will take them into account after this meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, panel.
The next person listed to speak is Mark Raimondo, said to be a supporter living at 122 Mowbray Street. Now, Mr. Raimondo, how do you come to be a supporter, and where's Mowbray Street?
Oh, that's in Sylvania, Mr. Chair. So I'm actually the applicant's town planner.
I see.
Yes, yes.
All right. In that case, I'll ask you to address the panel now.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just be very brief. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and local planning panel members. My name is Mark Raimondo from Maximus Development Australia. I'm the engaged consultant town planner acting on behalf of the owners, Mr. Chris and Mrs. Maureen Qureshi. I was engaged actually midway through the assessment of the modification application after council had sent its request for additional information and upon review of the concerns of raised by the objectors. During the process, I informed the owners of council's expectations and what they wanted to see and in relation to the concerns raised by the submissions at hand. We pretty much made a decision to amend the plans in accordance with council's requirements to satisfy the concerns of neighbours as best we could in good faith. Essentially, we believe that council has undertaken a thorough and balanced impartial assessment of the amended application and support the officer's recommendation and raise no objections in relation to the conditions of consent imposed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I noticed that Mr. Qureshi, you're listed to speak. I take it that Mr. Raimondo has covered the aspect from your point of view. Is that so, Mr. Qureshi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. He has. My input is just merely to give a bit of background. Registering that we're the our needs as a family and with four kids and including three teenage girls. So just for sanity, we've decided to increase that or to renovate the home. But yes, that is the essence of my input is just that we certainly thoroughly support council's tough but fair recommendations, and you know, certainly will continue to will abide by the conditions of consent.
Thank you, Mr. Qureshi. Julian Furza, do you wish to add anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Only that I'm the original architect that's been on the project. Only that we have no concerns with council's assessment report and their recommendations, nor any of the imposed conditions that they're putting forward. We believe that the new proposal, the amended proposal, addresses council's comments and queries without unreasonable impact to the adjoining neighbours. And I'll just be here for any questions.
Any questions from any panel member for the architect?
Yes, Mr.
Ms. Dura.
Just so I understand it, the original approval of the ground level, that was beyond what was established as the building BLZ, the building line zone or whatever it's called. And this will now go further than that. So can you just tell me, and also it's within 0.609, that's your setback from the boundary. So can you just tell me the logic of why you've needed to go out that much further, and why it actually meets the objectives of the zone in terms of, you know, that there would be potentially adding bulk to the building where, in theory, that area should be, you know, essentially a landscape space, and it's a difference to adjoining owners to look at building as opposed to landscaping.
Yes, with the internal layout of the house, the client needed more space to fit their family. Currently, we are well under the required allowable GFA of the site. In terms of the rear setback of the building, we were aligning it with, I guess there's a general building massing of all the buildings running down the street to the rear. I believe it's number 90. The building to the north of us actually turns the corner and wraps along the side of the street. So in terms of the, I guess, the massing of all the buildings, we actually start to bring that our building line to represent what they are doing as well. So if you look at a plan, it sort of, it does step out, but it does sort of have relation to the building to the north. In terms of the overall mass of the building, we have dropped it 300 millimetres below what we intended in the original DA. And I believe for the house to the south, it is 2.2 metres above their rear courtyard level, which I think what we were discussing is that if there was a fence of 1.8 metres on their boundary line, it would be only a further 400 millimetres above that. With also with the shadow impacts, there weren't any more adverse shadows on the southern property.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further from the panel?
Me, thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
All right. So that brings to the public meeting to a conclusion. As I've said several times, the panel will retire in order to consider all of the material that's been put before it, and in particular the matters that have been presented at the meeting today. And that decision, when it's made, will be published on the council website. So the public meeting is now closed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let you know once we're in closed session.
Thank you very much.